Morning, everyone. Since its emergence in the 1960s, the neo-Victorian novel has been self-consciously engaged with reinterpreting, rediscovering, and revisiting the Victorian past. Mary Louise Kirke further argues that neo-Victorianism's interest in the 19th century erotic expresses a desire to expose our era's sexual double standard, which can be traced back to the Victorians. In Fingersmith, 2002, Sarah Waters reflects on female sexuality, embodied by her two heroines, Susan, a criminal raised in a thieves' den, and Maud, an aristocratic young woman who has been specifically trained by her uncle to assist him in his work as a collector of pornographic works. These two protagonists' roads cross in a plot of fraud, forgery, and murder while they fall in love with each other and discover their lesbian identities. The narrative ends with the two heroines reuniting and the emergence of Maud as a new figure of female authorship intent on rewriting centuries of patriarchal discourse on female sexuality. The aim of this paper will be to analyze how Waters' text challenges patriarchal conditioning, masculinist writing, and male authorial figures by foregrounding notions of female theft, usurpation, poaching, and pickpocketing, thus arguably turning her author figure into a modern female Prometheus. I shall also investigate how Fingersmith employs a new form of metalepsis in order to negotiate, blur, or suppress the boundaries between author, figure, and character. Indeed, Waters does not intrude upon the text as an outside character, but is rather resurrected within Maud as a neo-new woman novelist. In her study of the obscene canon, Sarah Bull demonstrates the male centricity of forbidden works reviewed and circulated by Victorian scholars such as Henry Spencer Ashby and William Laird Close, arguing that such discourse serves to reinforce heteropatriarchal control over female subjugates. In the same vein, Kathleen Miller argues that in the 1860s and the 1880s, pornography became a tool of maintaining political and sexual hierarchies. For women, men's ability to assert power over the written text proved dangerous, as it encouraged political and sexual hierarchies that advocated the exploitation, oppression, and submission of women. In her reimagination of women's experience in such a tradition of Victorian male pornography, Sarah Waters resorts to what Mary Louise Kirke has theorized as neo-Victorian sexation. That is to say, she explores sensational representations of the Victorian sexual lives to establish links between Victorian and contemporary practices and discourses around sexuality. In Waters' novel, male pornography is represented as a multi-secular discourse embodied in the bibliography compiled by the Victorian gentleman, Mr. Lilly, whose ambition is to establish and preserve a pornographic canon for the ages to come. Taken as a whole, the titles he records, tracks down, and collects form an oppressive narrative which keeps his niece Maud entrapped and alienated from her own subjectivity and her own body, as it has more generally entrapped women for centuries. Moreover, Lily is engaged in providing material for the consumption of gentlemen and catering to their misogynistic sadomasochistic tastes. The character of Mr. Lily is inspired from Henry Spencer Ashby, the first Victorian bibliographer of pornographic literature and a prominent figure in what Sarah Bull names the Secret Museum, wherein different scholars blur the line between pornography and science. His name, Lily, connects him to Angela Carter's blue beard, who hunts females to please his sadistic desires, keeps them in subservience, and then disposes of them. Driven by perverse sexual tendencies, both male characters take pleasure in stripping females out of their virginity, symbolized by the flower. The plate bears his emblem, a clever thing of his own design, a lily drawn strangely to resemble a phallus and wound about with a stem of briar at the root. Waters 138. And so Mr. Lilly has been subjecting Maud to pornography from a very young age, thus depriving her of the innocence of her childhood. Contrary to Mr. Lilly's male pornography, written by male scholars and addressed to a male audience to satisfy masculinist desires, Fingersmith articulates a female erotica, which is not only written by a female novelist, but also centers on the journey of two female heroines, one of whom emerges as a riser. Since female authorship is at the core of the narrative, it seems apt to recall Sandra Gilbert's and Susan Gubar's metaphor of pen penis, through which the two critics expose women authors' anxiety regarding the phallus and writing, which were typically considered as exclusively masculine attributes and which men have long used to assert their power over women. In Fingersmith, Mr. Lilly, a scholar whose primary tool is the pen, succeeds in entrapping Maud like women have been imprisoned by the male pen before. However, by the end of the narrative, Water succeeds in assuming the pen, for Maud emerges as a writer in her own right. And she also assumes the penis, since she revises male pornography through a form of female writing which is not predicated on oppression, penetration, or sacrifice, but values respect, child pleasure, and mutual gift. More generally, the authoress calls for a generation of female authors who are no longer afraid to enter the traditionally male literary market, more particularly here, erotica, and to create an authorial identity of their own. Though sexual fantasy in Fingersmith is associated with asserting power over the subjected and the exploited female, and expressing such desire within a plot of criminality and fraud, thus reinforcing stereotypes associating lesbianism with device, Water uses the sexual motif for the sake of her political and textual project of deconstructing heteronormativity by appropriating the male-dominated realm of pornography and assuming the position of creator. The theme of creation is playfully foreshadowed by Water in her novel's title, which refers to the smith who heats metal in order to transform, sculpt, and refine it. The use of fire for the sake of creation in this context recalls the Greek myth of Prometheus, the legendary trickster who fashioned man from clay, rebelled against Zeus, and stole fire to give it to humanity. In the context of the narrative, the title also refers to Water's main female thieving protagonist, Susan, whose nimble fingers can unlock doors, mysteries, and even Maud's desire and inspiration. As in the myth, by usurping the pen penis and rebelling against male literary traditions, Waters manages to appropriate and divert male pornography using the female fire of authorship. By means of two lesbian characters, Water continues in the footsteps of many of her Victorian predecessors who could not or were not allowed to establish an authorial identity of their own and found themselves obliged to usurp masculine identities. Indeed, numerous Victorian women of letters published under male pseudonyms and were condemned to the margins when their true identities were exposed. The same idea of usurpation is essential to the plot, as there is a very long string of female characters who, in order to survive, have to use deception, identity theft, and other forms of stealing or forging objects, because they are not allowed to exist on their own terms in a patriarchal society without being criminalized. For example, Marianne Lilly, chased away because of her marital choice, finds herself obliged to sell her newborn daughter in order to rescue her from the tyranny of both her father and brother. Mrs. Saxby deceives her family by claiming that Susan stole money and turned on them in order to avoid being judged by the household as heartless, especially if her true identity as Maud's mother is revealed. Furthermore, when Susan is incarcerated in the lunatic asylum, she finds herself obliged to assume the identity of Maud Rivers in order to convince the doctor of her sanity. Then she resorts to stealing the key from the nurse and forging another one in order to escape. Through what she manipulates Charles through lies and deception so as to win his support. Such examples of usurpation in the narrative suggest that the Greek myth still exerts fascination in the 20th and 21st centuries, notably on female authors eager to compete with men and articulate their own potential for creativity, authority, and authorship. Defying patriarchal stereotypes of literary men before her, Sarah Waters herself can arguably be considered as a female Prometheus figure. Not only does she detain the power of creation, by which she manages to carve for herself a position in the literary market, but she also seeks to challenge dominant representations of femininity and female sexuality by offering a female version of erotica that celebrates mutual pleasure and complicity. She presents a new form of creative fire. Hence, as argued, the first act of theft in Fingersmith takes place at the level of author, that is, Waters, while the second at the level of the character author. Instead of promoting a model of male domination, which the patriarch makes use of the female body to satisfy his sexual needs, Waters allows the narrative space for Maud and Sue to explore their own female sexual desires. Waters envisions a journey of self-discovery and exploration of lesbian sexuality for her protagonist Maud. The narrative also follows the different stages of Maud's sexual awakening as she moves from complete rejection and denial to mutual nurture. Simultaneously, the narrative tracks Maud's evolution as a scholar. She starts from the margins of the library, away from the books, then moves to assist her uncle in the rewriting of the pornographic bibliography, and ultimately dethrones him and emerges as a writer in her own right while he is simply excluded from the narrative. The last scene of the text portrays her as she usurps her uncle's place literally by sitting on his desk, as well as figuratively by assuming the literary vocation. Such a profile distinguishes Maud from stereotypical Victorian representations of women often domesticated and imprisoned in their private spheres, and thus establishes her as a symbol of individual creativity, self-sufficiency, and emancipation from patriarchy. These characteristics indeed recall the figure of the new woman of the fin de siècle, who represents a significant cultural icon in the 1890s. Emerging as a liberated lesbian woman author, Maud, in fact, seems to embody the spirit of the late Victorian new woman, not unlike such writers as George Egerton, Michael Field, or Verna Lee at the fin de siècle. Interestingly, Maud's characterization recalls Hélène Cixous's conception of l'écriture féminine, which highlights how feminine writing celebrates the female body. Because its desires have been long repressed, in such texts, the description of the female body focuses on the different senses of sight, touch, and smell that translate its fluidity. In Sue's words, Maud is soft and smooth as butter. Too soft, she thought her. She imagined her bruising. She was like a lobster without its shell. She also imagines her like a statue with no clear borders. Indeed, Maud is often associated with flowing ink, notably in the last chapter of the narrative. Here are long quotes from the last chapter. Waters' narrative then follows Cixous' appeal that woman must write herself, must write about women, and bring women to writing from which they have been driven away as violently as from their own bodies. In Fingersmith, ironically, despite her illiteracy, it is Sue who brings such knowledge of one's body to Maud. She teaches her about lesbian love and helps her explore the side which her uncle buried within her. Sue manages to write over Maud's body and inscribes traces of herself on her skin. Maud admits that everything has changed, nothing has changed at all. She has put back my flesh, but flesh will close, will seal, will scar and harden. Having her body rewritten over by Sue, Maud will once again rewrite her own body later as she emerges as a writer. Reappropriating female sexuality in order to voice female desires, Maud substitutes her uncle's pornography with her new writing, representing the second act of theft of authorship. Both author and character author break the link with inherited male narratives that embody passive female victims and dominant male patriarchs. Contrary to male phallocentric language, in which women cannot occupy the subject position, as Luz Irigaray argues, the author and her protagonist advise a new female language. The female subject is portrayed in the discourse by means of materializing the female body. While denominations of this new subgenre could range from écriture féminine to moral pornography, Maud's new writing is a critique of and rebellion against male pornography. Maud writes her own fiction, filled with all the words for how she wants Sue. Indeed, the language she uses asserts how her body and all female bodies must be culturally and psychologically re-inscribed. As character and author figure, Maud ultimately embodies l'écriture féminine which Water advocates in Fingersmith. In an interview with Abigail Dennis, Water confesses that her text ultimately tries to at least gesture toward the possibility that women could write their own porn themselves, even if she doesn't sort of show it. In other words, Maud is Water's spokesperson in the novel. Both women are authors of erotica, engaged in the same political project of familiarizing women with their lesbian identities and striving to celebrate female sexuality for the sake of women's empowerment. And so, looking at Maud, Lily, and Sarah Waters from these angles not only blurs the boundaries between fictional character and author, but completely suppresses the distance between fiction and reality. Maud, who is imagined by Waters, allows for the latter's resurrection in the narrative. In this sense, as the character becomes an author, the author becomes a character. Waters' narrative creativity lies in her capacity not to merely intrude upon, but rather to infiltrate the text. Though such intrusion is common in neo-Victorian fiction among her peers, namely John Fowles, who integrates the French lieutenant's woman in the form of a narrator or an outsider character in the train wagon, Waters takes one step further. She is not simply an observer within her own narrative, but a whole dimension of the main protagonist, that of female authorship and individual creativity. So, Maud Lilly serves as Sarah Waters' doppelganger in the narrative. And so, metalepsis, defined by Gerard Genette as a deliberate transgression between the world of the telling and the world of the told, takes place through the medium of Maud, who acts as a link between the world of the reality and that of fiction. Reading Maud as Waters' fictional double enables us to understand that they both share the same political project, which, in the words of Constantini, aim at using her inventiveness to unearth the silenced histories of the marginalized, to arrange together the ransacked historical records of their existence, and to fill in the many gaps by imagining missing details, events, and emotions. Indeed, neo-Victorian fiction often deals with the empowerment of women facing male domination oppression by raising their awareness of their individuality and self-worth. But by choosing a new woman as her main protagonist, Waters focuses more specifically on the importance of female creativity. Waters herself then emerges as a new woman novelist engaged in rewriting the Victorian heroine of sensation fiction, just like the rebellious and tenacious female writers of the fin de siècle fiction in such words as Sarah Grant's The Beth Book or Ella Hepthorne Dixon's The Story of a Modern Woman. Thank you.